The El Conservador Radio Show is sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform and George Rodriguez on 930 AM, The Answer. Time for the El Conservador Radio Show with George Rodriguez. George is a constitutional conservative who loves to expose fake news and liberals. And now, El Conservador, George Rodriguez.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas, on this beautiful Saturday, May 4th, 2024. Tomorrow is El Cinco de Mayo. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a few moments, but I want to thank our sponsor, first of all, FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, my friends. They are the foremost knowledgeable people regarding the issue of the border crisis and illegal immigration. If you want to know anything about the border crisis and illegal immigration that we are facing right now, go to fairus.org. Again, fairus.org. Okay, so real quick about the Cinco de Mayo. It is the celebration of the victory of Mexican forces over French forces, French invaders, in 1863. It happened at the Battle of Puebla, and it was led by none other than Ignacio Zaragoza, General Ignacio Zaragoza, who was born in Goliad, Texas. How about that? So a Texan helped save Mexico on that occasion. So once again, my friends, let me tell you who our guests are real quick so we can get to the interviews. Our first guest is none other than Congressman, U.S. Congressman Chip Roy, my congressman. He's going to be chatting, my friends, about this whole idea that the Biden administration has come up with of importing Gaza refugees to the United States. Now, let me make sure that you understand, my friends. Gaza has been under the dictatorship of the of Hamas for almost 40 years, if not longer. And they have been influenced, they have been brainwashed to hate Israel, to hate America by Hamas. And now we're going to bring those refugees here to the United States? I don't think so. I don't think that's a good idea. So we're going to be talking and listening to what he's got to say about that whole situation. Then we've got Mr. Todd Bensman from the Center for Immigration Studies. Todd has a new article regarding the Columbia School of Journalism, my friends, which is extremely prestigious, who gives out Pulitzer Prizes, and how they are honoring Hamas journalists, propagandists, journalists that are supported by Hamas. I mean, this is incredible. You're going to want to hear that. Then you've got our third guest is Dr. Peter Skerry. Dr. Skerry is with Boston College, a political science professor. He's going to be chatting about his article regarding the lack of assimilation into America by the new immigrants that we've got coming in, the illegal aliens in particular. Our final guest is Mark Krikorian. Mark Krikorian is the director for the Center of Immigration Studies, and he's going to be chatting about the visit that he and several other folks took to the border last week, what he saw, what he came away with, what the folks who accompanied him to the border, what they thought and what they saw. I mean, this is the fact of the matter, my friends, is that we have got to educate folks. Among the group that came were elected officials from New Jersey, from Massachusetts, from various places. And I guarantee they walked away with their eyes very, very open to what is going on. So thank you again for joining us, my friends. We're going to go to our first guest. But once again, I want to thank our sponsor, FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. I want to encourage all of you, please, 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 to visit that website, fairus.org. Donate, contribute to FAIR, because FAIR pays my bills, so we want to circulate that fund, that money. We want to support FAIR. So, without further ado, let's go to our first guest. Howdy, howdy, howdy! Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, and we've got our good friend Congressman Chip Roy here from the 21st District in San Antonio, and I wanted to get him on because there's a couple of things that are going on. First of all, to give us an update of what is going on up on the Hill with spending and everything else, but also we hear that there is a proposal, Congressman, to bring Gaza refugees into the United States and settle some of them, even in Texas. Talk to us. Welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us. Talk to us. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, George, great to be on, as always. You know, I wish I had a good excuse for what's going on here in Washington, but unfortunately, we've had a little bit of more of the same lately. I'll get to the good news in a minute, but your point right now, starting with the refugee program, and again, your listeners are educated because they listen to you, but just to be clear, and you know this, that, you know, it's not just the masses that we see coming across the river on the Rio Grande and Eagle Pass or wherever it is. It's the blatant violation of our laws that we have explicitly in place, like parole, which are for humanitarian reasons on a case-by-case basis, that this administration is, instead of being case-by-case, they're making a blanket block group parole program and then dumping them into the United States, whether they dump them physically across the border into the United States or whether they are flown into the United States. So what got exposed through oversight in the last week was that we've got these 15 cities that have had people flown to them directly through this parole program. Now, the lion's share has gone to Florida. I'm sure my good friend Governor DeSantis has something to say about that. But the fact is, we also have cities in Texas that are on the list, and high, Houston, Dallas, and Austin, I think in that order. And it's another, you know, significant number of individuals. And so that's what I think people need to understand, right? You have 8,000 going to Houston, 2,200 to Dallas, and then another couple hundred to Austin. So, you know, you've got in that about 10,000 who have been flown directly into Texas on top of all the masses you see at the river. Meanwhile, you've had, I think, almost like 160,000 or something down in Florida. So this is a problem, and, you know, we've got to, you know, keep highlighting it for American people. But most importantly, we shouldn't be funding it. It's insane.
You know, it seems like we are being asked to fund our own demise because, I mean, we're bringing in people that are not vetted. Heaven knows the number of crimes that we have already recorded that have been committed by illegal aliens that have crossed otherwise, or Venezuelans that came in, you know, with that Border Patrol application that could be done online. I'm just flabbergasted with all of this.
So let me point out that we have this situation from the Palestinians, with now Biden wanting to pump in, you know, tens of thousands of people from Gaza. Again, this was a bill I voted against last week that had $5 billion of additional funding for, quote, refugee programs that they're now going to use to move people that the Arab countries, neighboring countries like Egypt, will not take, that we know 75%+ of whom support Hamas and their attack on Israel. And now we want to ship a whole lot of these people into the United States, on top of how many people have already been coming to the United States, on top of the 51.5 million foreign born who are here now. This is an insane policy. But again, I have to be blunt. My Republican colleagues funded it last week. Literally, they voted for that foreign aid.
That is outrageous. It really just freaks me out that people in the Republican Party, that leaders in the Republican Party, can go along with that, with all of that. What about the other issues like the budget and everything else that's going on up there?
Well, the fact of the matter is, we've just been going through that process, and unfortunately, Speaker Johnson has given up every bit of leverage that we have on the spending front. And you know, we passed a massive omnibus spending bill, including $200 million for an FBI headquarters. We passed all manners of earmarks for the LGBTQ stuff, etc. We have, now passed the foreign aid bill. So it's all done. There's not much we can do about it.
Wow.
But now we've got to try to focus in on FY25. Now, let me just try to give you some of the good news.
Tell us.
The good news is because the conservatives, we passed only a border security bill last year with no amnesty. We got Republicans off of the amnesty train, at least for a while. We passed the spending bills that we passed, funded non-defense spending flat, and then the defense spending increase all came out of the funding from the IRS expansion. And, you know, we've been able to have obviously a lot of oversight hearings and so forth. So people can't lose heart. What we have to do is set the expectations and the standards for the incoming, Lord willing, Republican majority in the House. So we got to go earn the votes. And then if Republicans are given the majority and President Trump is in the White House, we've got to use that to make sure we got expectations set so we can hold Republicans accountable.
That would be fantastic. That would be absolutely fantastic. Since I am in radio, the idea that George Soros is purchasing radio companies across the country is kind of it's disturbing. It's kind of frightening for me. Any thoughts on that?
You talking about, I mean, the overall problem, let's talk about George Soros for a moment, right? We've got multiple angles of attack. It seems clear, although I don't have the kind of oversight, information yet with, evidence, but it seems clear from reporting that George Soros was behind a lot of this organized protests across the campuses. Obviously, somebody's behind it, right? With the same tents, all that kind of stuff. And then, we've got obviously George Soros is behind BLM, but more importantly, we know what George Soros is behind in terms of all of the prosecutors, attacking our way of life in our cities, including in San Antonio and Austin, cities throughout Texas, where George Soros funded prosecutors are letting criminals out on the streets and not keeping our communities safe. And so now I've been pushing in to investigate George Soros buying up a whole lot of the debt of 240 radio stations across the country. I think he's trying to get his hooks into taking over radio. Obviously, an area where conservatives have had the ability to communicate for years. And so now he's trying to buy up radio. So I think we need to be aware of that. So I've sent a letter to the FCC trying to investigate that and see what we can do to make sure that he's not getting any sweetheart deals to take over conservative radio. But, we got a lot of work to do to try to push back on all that.
Well, the battle that you fight up there, we really, really appreciate it and respect it, Congressman. Anything else that you'd like to share with us before we let you go? Good news, otherwise, anything that's going on?
Yeah, I mean, look, I do want, people tend to kind of lose heart when they see us spend more money that we don't have, allow open borders, continue to fund foreign wars without, clear missions, all the things that I go and speak about on the floor. But remember that there is a large block of voters here, members of Congress here, who are standing up and doing the right thing. Just last night, some of us had to take a really tough vote against a bill that was defined as an anti-Semitism bill, which, of course, I support, making clear that we're opposing anti-Semitism in the United States and push back on all this nonsense. I'm proud of Jay Hartzler at the University of Texas and Ben Sass at the University of Florida and others that have pushed back on these college campuses. But unfortunately, this bill had language in it, adopted from an international organization that has language that gets into thought speech. And that's just something I can't countenance. I'm not going to empower the federal government, particularly the Department of Education, to be able to police speech. I think it's constitutionally suspect, if not a clear violation of the Constitution, the way it's crafted. And I think we need to be careful about those sorts of things. And fortunately, there were a lot of my Republican colleagues who were willing to stand up and vote the right way. So, take heart. Let's just keep electing good people. The primaries matter. You live in a district where there's a primary or a runoff, get out and support the right candidates.
You got it. Thank you very, very much. Folks, we've been listening to our good Congressman Chip Roy from the 21st District. Congressman, keep up the good fight, and we will get you back on sometime soon to give us another update of what's going on.
God bless you, my friend. Look forward to seeing you in person soon back home in Texas, and thanks for what you do.
You stay safe. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got one of our regular guests, a very good friend of mine, Mr. Todd Benzman with the Center for Immigration Studies. Todd has written a brand new article that I really wanted to chat about. The article has aired or been released on this Wednesday, May the 1st, 2024. And it has to do, my friends, with propaganda disguised as journalism. I also want him to talk about the situation of the Biden administration actually planning to, or proposing, should I say, to bring Gaza refugees to the United States. And that's a real concern for me, my friends. That's a real concern. Todd, thank you for taking time to be with us, my friend. Welcome to the show as usual.
Sure. Always good to be here, George.
All right. So tell us about this article about Columbia University's journalism department and honoring pro-terrorist writers, journalists, propagandists.
Well, yeah. So, you know, first of all, Columbia School of Journalism is the paragon of American journalism education. It's like the top of the heap. It's prestigious. It's 120 years old. You know, Joseph Pulitzer, namesake for the Pulitzer Prizes, established this school, and the school still is the one that gives out the Pulitzer Prizes. And in February, it appears as though they put up on the main lobby of their building a huge tribute shrine to what they call fallen heroes, journalists in Gaza, and didn't publicize it or announce it or anything, but it's got about 100 photos on it. And when you take a look at who they've got up there, at least 15 work for Al-Aqsa Television, which is the propaganda arm for Hamas, which is a U.S. designated terrorist organization by Treasury and State Departments. And Al-Aqsa TV itself is designated by the United States under Barack Obama as a terrorist entity that is banned and outlawed from any sort of support or banking services in the United States. And 15 of these guys worked for a terrorist designated terrorist entity, Al-Aqsa. At least six more worked for Al-Aqsa's sister station, a radio station. And probably a dozen more worked for the U.S. designated group Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is another U.S. designated terrorist organization for a reason, because they kill. That's their job, is to just kill and commit genocide and all the rest. And their media organizations are no different from those media organizations that support ISIS and Al-Qaeda, you know, Inspire Magazine. Well, we kill those people every chance we get. If we can send a Hellfire missile at the director of Inspire Magazine or ISIS's media outlets, then, you know, we will in a second kill them, because they may not be throwing bombs themselves, but they're certainly not journalists. And that goes for anybody who's working for Al-Aqsa Television, the radio station, or the media organizations that work for in support of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And there's the journalism department, the paragon, the scion of journalism in America, up on the wall with apparently journalistically unvetted people. Either they didn't vet them journalistically, they didn't apply their own journalistic standards that they preach in class to their own wall, or they did, found out who these guys were and put them up there anyway, which is, I don't know which is worse.
That's incredible. You know, I have seen some of Al-Aqsa's programming, and it is nothing but propaganda. Propaganda disguised as this, propaganda disguised as that, but it's all propaganda. Now, the other issue is that in some cases it's propaganda aimed at kids, which is really, really just disturbing to me.
That's right. Al-Aqsa gained some notoriety about a decade ago, maybe a little bit longer, for putting up this sort of kind of Mickey Mouse type character named Falfour in a children's show. Went on for years before anybody noticed it. And Falfour, the, you know, fluffy animal suit wearing character, would just urge kids to become suicide bombers and to pick up AK-47s and kill Jews. And then finally, when it was sort of discovered and it went viral, you know, in 2007, 2008, whenever that was, their response was to have a Israeli, you know, depicted as an Israeli bureaucrat, murder Falfour, and then this other fluffy character rose up in its place and does the same, you know, preaching of violence and murder to children every day in Hamas, in Gaza. And that's kind of, you know, one of the more notorious episodes. But on a routine basis, Al-Aqsa television glorifies every suicide bombing that they can in Israel, that kill and maim civilians, and still preaches violence and hatred. And for the Columbia Journalism School to honor these people in a shrine on their main lobby building wall is atrocious. It's just, what the heck happened here? It amounts to an official endorsement, because the dean of that school had to have okayed it. You can't just put up a big monument inside that lobby without permission. The dean's going to be walking by it every single day, and so are all the journalism students. And I think that they may be worried about it, or maybe embarrassed, because they never wrote about it. They never covered it. They certainly don't advertise it. I just noticed it because there were some social media postings with it, with pictures of it. And I'm like, wait, what? And, you know, a quick internet search, and you don't have to be a brilliant investigative journalist to find that Al-Aqsa Television is a U.S. designated terrorist entity.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you also this, because this dovetails into this discussion we're having about Al-Aqsa and terrorism journalism, as we can call it. The Biden administration is now talking about bringing Gaza refugees to the United States. Now, on the surface, that sounds very noble. However, how many of these people, these kids, for example, are going to be fans of Al-Aqsa TV or any kind of terrorist journalist?
Yeah, people in Gaza, especially under Hamas rule, grew up completely steeped in murderous hatred and incitement for violence. Whoever they're bringing in probably grew up on Falfour, on that television show, and whoever came in afterward, Nookie or something, and everything else. Their radio, television, mosques, schools are absolutely steeped in murderous, genocidal hatred. And I would question whether anybody from Gaza should be allowed to relocate to the United States on purpose. I would want to know what sort of vetting you're going to do to make sure you don't get a bunch of people in here who absolutely hate our guts. Because make no mistake, the vast majority of people who live in Gaza hate our guts. Why ever would we bring people like that on purpose into the U.S. Is beyond me. The blanket answer to that is no, and not only no, but hell no, not ever.
Yep, and you know, it seems like we're going to, it's not bad enough that we have been allowing under the table criminals and terrorists to come through the open border. Now we're going to import them. Incredible. I don't understand this.
Right. I mean, I think the Biden administration is trying to appease and give feel-good actions and messaging to its far-left progressive wing, which is essentially, you know, a modern-day Nazi party. Those people are supremacists, anti-Jewish, genocidal maniacs, and we're seeing it wide open in front of us every single day on these campuses. They are wannabe murderers, the American progressive left.
Well, you know, it is very, very disturbing to watch this. We're going to let you go, but tell the folks where they can follow you, buddy, because, I mean, you've got articles that are fantastic and extremely interesting for people to read.
That's right. You can follow me, Bensman, at Bensman Todd on X. You can subscribe to my newsletter at toddbensman.com. It's right there, as well as my other social media right there at toddbensman.com. Get on my newsletter, and you can stay abreast of my writings.
Excellent. Excellent. Folks, once again, we've been speaking with my good friend, Mr. Todd Bensman from the Center for Immigration Studies. Todd, keep up the good work, and we'll have you back on again pretty soon.
Thank you very much.
Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to fairus.org.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas. And we've got a new guest with us, a gentleman that I met a couple of weeks ago when the Center for Immigration Studies had a tour down here. Dr. Peter Skerry, who is a professor of political science in Boston College, obviously in Boston. And I wanted to get him on because he's written a very, very interesting article, my friends. I just want to get his perspective on what is going on. Dr. Skerry, thank you very much for taking time to be with us, my friend.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So tell us about your article. What was it all about? What are you asserting?
Okay. Yeah, the article's in the current issue of National Review. It's called, it's on the cover, actually. I'm so pleased with that. It's called Insane Asylum. And it's really an effort to try to understand, you know, how we should think about what's going on these days with regard to the border and migration issues generally. It reflects my thinking and research I've done over quite a few years now, and certainly one part of what I'm trying to press in that article is, and this may be a bit curious to some of your listeners, is that if you look at what's going on either in the South Texas Mexico border, which is what I was visiting a couple of weeks ago when I met you on the way back from in San Antonio, as well as what's going on in cities like New York, Chicago, and my own city of Boston, which has been experiencing, you know, substantial influxes of migrants who have come across that border. I think that one of the things we see going on is that what's getting people, one of the things that's getting people so upset is the kind of social disorder and disruption that the large numbers of people coming from outside our society who don't necessarily speak our language, don't know our ways, put demands on our social services, cause disruptions in local neighborhoods and so forth, that those kinds of impacts, I think, are the kinds of impacts that have long bothered Americans about the immigration that we've been experiencing over the last several decades. Although usually the debate has gotten framed in terms of legal versus illegal immigrants. Okay, usually for several decades now, things get defined as the problem is illegal immigrants. Things are fine with legal immigrants. Well, I think what we see going on right now is that what's legal can be a rather technical definition, which is often the case in immigration law. These are very difficult lines to draw, although I think they're easy to draw right now. But they're getting drawn in a way that lets large numbers of people in So legality is not really what's challenging us in one sense right now. It's the fact that huge numbers of people are arriving in our cities, whether we're talking about El Paso, San Antonio, or Boston, and putting huge burdens on our social services and our communities. So I think we have to get beyond simply thinking in terms of legal versus illegal and think more in terms of the way large numbers of immigrants, especially poorly educated immigrants who come from other cultures and societies, challenge us and put strains on our institutions.
I remember the situation when Southeast Asian, Hmong, I believe, were some of them. People arrived, and those were in small numbers, and the cultural clash that occurred in communities where they were resettled. We've got now millions of people coming in, and there seems to be a definite culture clash beginning to appear, as well as a strain on resources.
I couldn't agree more. You're obviously referring to the Vietnamese. Both people who finally got here in the 80s, and many of them settled along the Texas coast, Galveston, and places like that.
Correct.
And you know, this is nothing new in our history. Immigrants have always posed challenges in terms of how they're going to assimilate, what elements of their own culture they bring to the United States, and how they do or do not adapt. I think that's a given in immigration, but we've gotten to the point, the way our elites talk about these issues, that if anybody points out, and I would include myself in this category, if anybody points out that there's strains or problems when immigrants arrive here or migrants arrive here, then, you know, then you're fomenting racism or you're a racist.
Yes.
And there's no winning that game. If we can't face up to the real challenges that large-scale migration pose for us and for migrants, then we can't get anywhere. And that's kind of where we are now. Our elites and, you know, those who deem themselves pro-immigration will shut down any conversation by, you know, with the word racism. Well, I'm not a racist. I don't know about you. I don't think you are either. But I think immigrants pose real challenges. And, you know, sometimes, often those challenges have been worth it because they bring other things to our country. They're workers. They enrich our culture. But that doesn't mean there aren't strains and problems attendant upon huge numbers of people coming into our country. And I don't think we're capable of many of Americans, again, many of our elites and policymakers in Washington, aren't willing to face up to that.
What about the situation, Dr. Scary, where you've got this push now for a respect for this foreign culture that somehow acculturating or somehow assimilating into America, it's frowned upon. It's not encouraged. And so how do people become American, for crying out loud?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. What you point to is definitely a strain among many of my academic colleagues. Again, many of the elites, policymaking elites in Washington and elsewhere. What you point to is real, but I don't know that it has much real impact. I mean, it's certainly off-putting to hear. And not helpful. That's for sure. But I think immigrants come here, and one way or another, they assimilate. Now, sometimes that doesn't mean they assimilate in positive ways. They might young Latinos might assimilate to a gang culture. They might assimilate to, you know, the counterproductive aspects of American society. You know, we're not perfect. So we have to look carefully at how assimilation occurs. I think we have to be realistic that assimilation causes strains and is not easy for immigrants and it's not easy for non-immigrants. But what we need to do is to encourage immigrants to assimilate in positive ways, My favorite example is speaking English.
Yes.
You know, I've met few immigrants in my life, and I spent lots of time in immigrants' communities. I've met few immigrants who don't want to learn English, or at least some English, okay? I've met lots of activists who will say, no, no, you have to learn Spanish. Don't worry about English. But I think that's a relatively marginal group. The immigrants themselves know they need to learn some English. But you know what? We don't do a lot to help them. I've made a study of looking at ESL programs. And over the last 20 or 30 years, the funding for ESL programs from Washington has gone down, down, down. We don't emphasize that enough. Ordinary citizens do, but our policymakers have not done that. And I think that's partly because of the bilingual education lobby and bilingual advocates who want to celebrate Spanish or whatever immigrant language you have. That's, you know, you can celebrate your language, but you do that in the privacy of your home.
That's right.
Or in your neighborhood. And I know Mexican Americans are proud to do that, but they also want to learn English.
That's right.
And we don't help them very much other than just sort of saying learn English. But we could do a lot more to fund and support, whether privately or governmentally, serious bilingual education programs, because we just don't do that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we spoke Spanish at my home, but the minute that you left the front door and went outside, you were supposed to speak English, and that's all there was to it.
For many people, that whole notion has changed, obviously, or they've been encouraged to change in that direction, and I think that's that creates lots of problems for all of us, for sure.
You got it. Dr. Scarry, thank you very much for taking time to share some thoughts with us. Do you have a blog where we could refer folks to read your writings?
I don't have a blog, but I certainly have a page of my writings at my Boston College website. So if your listeners just type in Boston College Peter Scarry, you'll find my webpage there with many of my writings.
Excellent.
As well as my email address, where if people have questions, they should feel free to email me.
Excellent. Dr. Scarry, thank you very, very much. Folks, we've been speaking with our new friend, Dr. Peter Scarry, professor of political science at Boston College in Boston, Mass. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I didn't mention that I spent 6 months in San Antonio in the mid-1980s trying to understand Mexican-American politics, and I had a great time there and enjoyed it, and was great to be back and to meet you this time, okay?
You know what? I would love to get you back on to talk about what you saw then versus what we've got now, because we've got a very, very dominant liberal, Chicano, as they would call it, Mexican-American political machine here in Texas now, here in San Antonio. So it'd be great to talk to you and hear what you saw back in those days versus what we've got now.
I would love to do that.
You've got it. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got, as a guest, Mr. Mark Krikorian, who is the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And we've had several of the folks from the center on our show before, but it's a great privilege to have Mr. Krikorian. I wanted to get Mark on here because he brought a group of folks down to the border last week, and I wanted to get his reaction as well as what he heard from the folks that accompanied him. Mark, thank you very, very much for taking time from your busy schedule. What did you see at the border? The folks that came with you? What was their reaction?
We lead a tour of the border, some part of the border, every year. And this year we went to Eagle Pass and Del Rio because that was, you know, the center of the action a few months ago. What we saw was that the Mexican government has basically diverted much of the traffic in order to try to kind of tamp down the severity of the issue to make sure that President Biden gets reelected. I mean, it's just sort of nakedly, that's what it's about. Obviously, we saw a lot of the efforts that Governor Abbott is making, and those, they're not nothing. They actually do help dissuade potential border jumpers and the smuggling gangs to move further west to try Arizona and California, which is more expensive because it's another 1,000 miles away, but there's no barbed wire, there's no state troopers. And in fact, and we didn't see this because we were in El Paso, I mean, in Del Rio and Eagle Pass, but up in El Paso, because Juarez, the Mexican city on the other side, also borders on a little bit of New Mexico, a lot of the illegal crossings are going into New Mexico because the governor there is a Democrat and doesn't do anything to stop it. The group we took, we were about 20 people all told, and only a few of them were really familiar with the border. They're all interested, but I think there were... we talked with a whole bunch of people, Border Patrol union people, a federal judge, a retired Border Patrol agent who's now a writer down there. And the severity of the problem and the consequences for the country broadly were something I think that a lot of our guests were able to see up close in a way that you really can't when you're just reading it in the newspaper or watching videos. And in fact, the group crossed over to Piedras Negras on the Mexican side opposite Eagle Pass and got to see from there what the Texas fortifications look like, but also other places along the border where there's nothing stopping you from crossing. And so it really did, I think, help give people an idea of how difficult it is to control almost 2,000-mile border and the importance of reducing the incentives to get here in the first place. Because with this administration, they're just letting people go if you get across. And so changing that is as important as actually putting physically things up at the border. Because if it's not worth jumping the border, because you're not going to get anything out of it, fewer people are going to try. And it really does help to get down there and see it with your own eyes.
We had I had the opportunity to speak and interview New Jersey Assemblyman Katrina, I believe it was. Paul Kenitra, who was just flabbergasted by what he saw. But then we got to hear what the impact that's happening in his backyard all the way to New Jersey. And this is truly a national crisis at this point.
Yeah, and I think this is a point you made, too, and a lot of people have made, is that every state is a border state. I mean, New Jersey is a border state for all intents and purposes, because once the Biden administration forces the Border Patrol to let these people go, they can go anywhere they want. And they do. You know, they're relatives all over, or they get job offers or whatever it is, and so they'll move to New Jersey, and they'll move to Wisconsin and, you know, Montana and anywhere they want. And so we also had an activist and writer from Massachusetts on the group. And again, Massachusetts is a border state. Every state is a border state. We had people from, I think they were from Kansas. It was a couple who weren't, you know, activists or anything like that. They really just wanted to see what the story was because, you know, they'd been reading and hearing and seeing about this. They'd spent some time in Latin America and they wanted to see what it was like. And again, it just gets back to the same point. This isn't just a Texas, Arizona, California problem. Every state is a border state. Every town is a border town.
Now, from the perspective of the Center for Immigration Studies, do you folks, have you done research on what is the solution that we can have? Because, I mean, my grandparents used to be mad about illegal immigration, but never had we ever seen anything like we've got going right now.
No, we don't. You know, in the past, illegal immigration was mainly people from Mexico, from rural Mexico, coming to parts of the rural United States to do agricultural work. That's even now, that's the way people think of illegal immigration, even though now that's just almost an asterisk. I mean, most of the people jumping the border illegally aren't even from Mexico. And they're not going into ag work. And so the old perception of illegal immigration really needs to change. And, you know, job one would be to make it harder for illegal immigrants to get work. There's an online system called E-Verify. So when you hire, it's a free system. The Homeland Security runs it. And when you hire somebody and input their Social Security and IRS information for payroll, you just also check whether, you know, that's real. Does it match their name? Is that a real number? And, you know, we've been doing it for years here at the center, and it doesn't guarantee no illegal alien will get a work, get a job, but it sure makes it a whole lot harder. The problem is that system, that program is voluntary, and about half of new hires go through it, but of course the illegal immigrants in the other half. And so probably the single most important thing to do, and this doesn't relate specifically to Biden's mess at the border, this is sort of a little bit bigger picture issue on controlling illegal immigration, is making the use of the E-Verify, screening through E-Verify, a mandatory part of all new hiring, just like it is when you have to enter a person's Social Security number when you, you know, put them on the payroll. Just make E-Verify part of that process, and you're not going to solve the problem, but you're going to take a giant step in the right direction.
Wow. One more question. Do you think that more folks like these folks that you brought here, do you think that more people need to see and hear what is happening at the border so that they can
absolutely
get educated?
Yeah, no question about it. And I think one of the most interesting things for me, because, you know, I've spoken with Border Patrol agents and Texas DPS troopers and what have you. That's not new for me, although you always learn something new. But one of the things that I thought was most interesting is we actually met with some local folks who were Republican activists and office holders. And now, you know, these counties are like 98% Mexican American. Right. So these are people who were almost, I mean, you could put it this way, they're almost ethnically Democrats in the same way that, say, Italians were in the old days, you know, 100 years ago. And so they've been voting for, you know, Franklin Roosevelt and Jack Kennedy for, you know, generations, long after those guys were dead. But what we saw when we talked with these people was that the disaster at the border, as well as other craziness that the Democratic Party has been engaging in other areas, is significantly moving a lot of people along the border toward the Republican Party. And, you know, the irony of this, that these people are all big Trump fans. And in fact, the Trump's vote exceeded anything Republicans had gotten in these counties along on the river, you know, from years.
Right.
And, you know, all of this talk about how Trump's evil and he hates Hispanics, blah, blah, blah. And yet these people were all gung-ho. We need to have Trump because we've got to get rid of Biden. In fact, our bus driver, because we had one of these minibus things, and he's an immigrant from Mexico City. His English wasn't great. I mean, he was a great guy, all around fantastic a companion on the trip. But, you know, in his very thick Spanish accent, Mexican accent, he's saying, we've got to get rid of Biden. We need to get Trump back. That really was, I mean, you know, you see that on TV and you read the poll data and stuff, but when you actually meet people, regular people, one of them owns is like a realtor, another one owns a cleaning company. There's a guy running for sheriff down there, the first Republican candidate in his county for sheriff ever in history, like since Texas independence, never had a Republican candidate. You really see how the disaster at the border really is helping realign politics in a way that I think is good for these communities. It's also good for the country.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Tell the folks where they can follow and how they can support the Center for Immigration Studies before we let you go.
We're online at cis.org. You can sign up for emails. We don't send you a lot of emails, one or two a week. We never give your address to anybody for any reason ever, so you don't have to worry about that. We have a donate button for anybody who's got a few coins left in their pocket, they don't know what to do with. And we're on Twitter. And in particular, if you really like snark and sarcasm, you could follow me on Twitter. My handle is Mark S., as in Stephen, Mark S. Krikorian.
You got it. Mark, thank you very, very much for taking time to be with us. Folks, we've been speaking with the director of the Center for Immigration Studies, Mr. Mark Krikorian. Mark, thank you very, very much. Keep up the good work, and we'll get you on the show again sometime soon.
Thank you, George. Anytime.
You got it. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Folks, once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. I want to thank our sponsor, FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Thank you so much for paying the bills for us. If you want to know anything about the border crisis, my friends, both in your backyard as well as what is happening at the border, go to FAIRUS.org. Again, FAIRUS.org, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. I want to thank our guests today, Congressman Chip Roy, Todd Benzman from the Center for Immigration Studies, Dr. Peter Skerry from Boston College, and Mark Krikorian, the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. I want to thank these fine people for joining us today and providing us insight into the border crisis, my friends. The fact of the matter is that as long as we've got these liberals, these leftists in power in Washington, D.C., they are not going to do anything to help our country. They are going to import people that we shouldn't import, and they are going to allow people that definitely should not be here to be here. People that are criminals, people that are possibly terrorists. So, thank you again for joining us. Join us next week, my friends. This is George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Till next time.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to FAIRUS.org.